This is Internet Marketing.
Hello, Kelvin Newman here from the Internet Marketing Podcast. Thanks for joining us on today's show. As well as hosting this podcast, I also organise the Brighton SEO conferences in the UK and the US. You can check them out at brightonseo.com. But what's on today's episode? So, we're talking about content success. So it's very easy, particularly in the modern world, to produce content. Many people are doing it. Lots of people are doing a lot of it, but not as many people are being successful. So we're going to be talking about content success. Who are my guests today? Well, I've got a really interesting conversation coming up with you with Natalie Arney and Zoe Burke, two real experts in the area of content. They shared some great stuff in this episode. So let's dive straight into that practical stuff. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast. My name is Kelvin Newman and I'm joined today by two really interesting guests who are going to be talking about content success. Now, content is one of those topics that kind of comes up, you know, in this podcast and more broadly when talking about digital marketing, because it, you know, very much the trend of maybe the last 15 years or so has been towards more and more brands, more and more individuals, you know, lots and lots of people producing content, and many of them doing that in such a way to kind of promote their business or their kind of organization. However, just because you can produce content doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be successful. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about what you can do to ensure that your content can be more successful and achieve the objectives that you would be hoping it to. But as always, when we've got these podcasts, I always like our guests to introduce themselves and provide a bit of context about them and how they came to be working in this space and talking about this topic. So yeah, if it's okay, Natalie, I'll come to you first to kind of go, what's the Natalie story for everyone who's listening today if they don't already know you?
Yeah, hi, I'm Natalie Arney. I am a freelance SEO consultant based in now Worthing in the UK. I worked in digital marketing for nearly 12 years now and started out mainly content, general digital marketing, and through the years kind of develop my SEO knowledge. I work across a number of different types of business, work with agencies, and work with brands themselves as a consultant, and yeah, I really love my job.
Oh, fantastic. And how about you, Zoe? What's your kind of story of coming to work in digital?
Well, I'm very one track. It's not very varied. So about 12 years ago, I started out as an intern on a wedding brand called Hitched. And for the last 12 years, I haven't really moved very far away from that. I've moved around the wedding industry a little bit. I'm back at Hitched now. And I've always specialized in weddings and digital content. And for me, it was a bit of a pivot because I was really set on doing print when I left university. I took this internship at Hitched thinking, well, it's a foot in the door. It'll get me to where I want to be. And over a decade later, I'm still here. I don't do print and fully immersed in weddings. So it's very niche.
That's interesting. I suppose as a space as well, the wedding industry and the content related, it probably was very print driven, right? And that's maybe shift. Is that still the case? Is that like, how does that kind of break down? Or is it everyone's online only now?
Yeah, sadly, it's not the case anymore because I do think wedding magazines are very beautiful and they do hold a particular value for that audience. But unfortunately, it is a very difficult industry, the print industry. So yeah, there aren't that many print magazines around. I did get to launch one as part of my career, which was a very interesting experience for me as a very digital person. It was hard to shift that mindset, but yeah, it is predominantly all digital now.
And what did you find were the biggest differences sort of between producing content for like a printed publication and an online publication? Because it is one that I imagine many of our listeners, some might be from a print background, but many I imagine would be predominantly online only.
It was very stressful. I'm very used to with digital content, you pretty much know straight away how it's gone down. You can measure those metrics and track your performance. But unfortunately with print, you put it out there and you hope for the best. And that's it really. You have more freedom in how you write. You can put a lot more puns in and things because you're not quite so bound to SEO guidelines. But yeah, you sacrifice getting that kind of instant feedback from your audience.
And that's interesting because I suppose that leads us in quite nicely to the topic we're going to talk about today in terms of the success of content. And I suppose, yeah, what you talked about there, kind of like getting that instant feedback on your content. What are some of the ways you would, you know, determine if a piece of content has been successful for you, Zoe, when you're writing for your website?
For me, probably SEMrush, SEMrush. I don't really know what we're supposed to call it.
There's various arguments, and I think it's one of those ones they almost like lean into the kind of the.
Yeah, I'm a SEMrush girl. You know, that's my go-to when it comes to measuring what we do. I mean, wedding content, it rotates. You know, there's a cycle because your audience renews every 2 years. So while the audience is different, the wants are the same. So you do end up delivering the same content over and over again. Things change quite slowly in the world of weddings. So we do go to SEMrush as our first port of call to see, you know, have we moved the needle on the SERPs? Where have we gone with this? Who might be ahead of us? Who's behind us? What do we need to think about? That's our first go-to. And then, you know, Google Analytics is a big one. And we use Click in the company I work for, which I hadn't been aware of until I came back here a couple of years ago. But I found that really useful for very specific, very drilled down marketing metrics.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, it's that kind of like, yeah, the outputs and, yeah, inevitably with a kind of a bit of a SEO mindset, that's often many of the reasons why people, not the only reason, but like it's certainly a, you know, part of the reason why you're publishing and probably a common means of generating that initial visit to the site, I imagine, and that side of things. And then the hope is that they then might sign up for a mailing list or, you know, come back as direct traffic.
Yeah, obviously every couple's unique, every wedding is unique, but how people plan their weddings, very much the same and has been very much the same for the past 10 years. You know, you typically have never planned a wedding before. So you turn to the internet and you write, how do I plan a wedding? And that's where we come in.
Fantastic. And Natalie, have you kind of had many like examples of working in sectors where it's kind of that churn of the customers or does it tend to be ones where you've tended to work more where it's like, well, actually it's they're there for a period of time and any kind of patterns around the coming in, coming out of a space and some of the projects that you worked on?
I think it's a bit of a mix. I would say when we're looking more to the B2B side of things, especially in SaaS, it's more of a, if you're spending a lot of money on something, if it's a big ticket subscription, for example, or kind of an enterprise level product, then the churn rate is going to be, well, you'd think, hope it would be less, but people are going to come back to your site in other ways rather than through SEO. So you want to create content that's not just there for SEO, that's going to be there within email marketing cadences, within kind of, you know, social, be able to be shared via social channels as well. And then when you're looking at industries such as travel, obviously people are less, well, I say people are less dedicated to brands, but some people are, and some people are really, really loyal to the brands that they buy from. However, having worked across a number of different travel brands, it's people can be less loyal if they're very price oriented, or if they're looking for something that's very, very specific. So if they're looking for a luxury holiday, that say, for example, like one of Zoe's brides or grooms is looking for their, you know, their dream holiday, then they're going to look for different content, and they're going to look for it less. So it's very, very varied.
And it's interesting there. So you kind of alluded to this sort of understanding of your audience and kind of, I suppose, persona development or audience research. Is that something that you've ever had much involvement in doing? And does that kind of underlie a lot of what you're like, how you, you know, determine what content you're producing?
So for me, I guess agency side, I did it a lot more. So one of the agencies I worked with previously did a lot of work looking at building personas and for clients, and also using different kind of tools to be able to do that. So, for example, a lot of the time they used Brandwatch, for example, and really looking into what people were talking about, their affinity with different kind of other brands, how they were marketed to, what worked, what didn't work. And then I guess the problem with personas, as we know, is that, you know, if we look at, say, King Charles, should I say, and Ozzy Osbourne, they're the same. They're a white man that's British, and they're the same age. They probably both got the same net worth, but they're completely different people. So it's obviously we need to think about, okay, if we're looking at personas and we're looking at who to produce content for, we can't just limit ourselves to certain categories and certain elements of a persona. We have to really kind of spend a lot of time on doing that. And obviously now with all of the economic issues that we're finding, is that brands might not be dedicating into creating and spending a lot of time on these more detailed specific personas. So yeah, it's a tricky one. But in the past, I have worked with obviously brands that we have created personas to then target.
I suppose that's interesting, is it? Yeah, you're kind of going that like it is one of these things that potentially could be quite helpful in like informing the content that you produce and how you go about doing that, but also could also be seen as a, well, that's not producing, you know, that time that's spent on that isn't putting content on the website, that's not producing an article that could get traffic. Zoe, have you found that? Do you still, because it's like you've been in the industry for a long time, you obviously know that, is that, do you internalize that, or is that kind of something you've done as a kind of considered you know, like process to go through, or is it like, well, that's just your instinctive nature as a journalist and the journalism teams?
A bit of a combination. I think I'm very lucky to have stuck in one field and in a very similar job for many years. Like, people don't really do that. But for me, I make sure I don't get complacent, because I think it can be quite easy to sit back and say, well, I've done this for 12 years. I know what couples want. I actually don't. Like, I don't. And I have to make sure that I'm always checking in. And this is something that I have done, you know, pre-COVID, I worked for a company called Ocean Media, and we launched a couple of new products there. And we would travel the country and do focus groups with people. And that seems quite bonkers now when you think about it, because we could have just done some Zoom calls, but I don't know, we weren't that, weren't that into Zoom at the time. But it was really important to meet with people, to get their buy-in, to get their feedback, to understand what they wanted from the products that we were giving to them, to make sure, and we did B2B, and B2C. So we would meet, you know, bridal shop owners, but we would also meet couples planning their wedding. And that stuck with me because I felt like that was a really valuable experience. And I have made sure going forward in my career that I am always available to my audience. And sometimes it can get a bit much. You know, during the pandemic, I made myself very available to people, and it was hard. It was hard work at times. It was a lot of an emotional load, but I feel like the content that we delivered as a result was better for it. And I think a lot of brands delivering content, especially now so many are digital, you don't tend to see the people behind the brand anymore. Whereas, you know, in a magazine, you would see, you know, their face next to their byline or something. And that is becoming more common now, and people do want to have that connection. And I make sure that our couples and our businesses know where they can reach me, typically through social media, it tends to be now. And I'll always make the time to chat to them, because I think the feedback you get, the end result, I mean, it's a little bit, I don't want to give spoilers, but it's what my talk is about this year at Brighton SEO. It's the change that it drives in your content when you've actually got real people telling you what they want to see and hear, I think is invaluable.
Yeah, and I can see that makes a huge amount of sense there as well. And I suppose, Natalie, kind of bringing back to that point we're talking about the investment in content, is that kind of like, you know, one of those things that's like, is there, you know, do people value that kind of understanding? Is it one that's trickier to like prove the value, and kind of there's an expectation, hey, you've got a couple of, you know, you've got a keyword research tool, that's all the customer insight you need here, you can understand their pain points, their preferences? Or do you think that like, yeah, that kind of slightly more qualitative approach is one that's, you know, worthwhile but perhaps undervalued or not valued at all?
Yeah, I think it's very undervalued. And aside from that, I think looking at other sources of quantitative data as well. So for example, when I worked in-house at a travel brand, we were able to monitor. We use a software that basically didn't monitor customer service calls, but it was able to categorize the calls and the issues so that the team could obviously monitor how many issues were coming through, what the questions people were asking were, etc. Now, that was fine for their job and it made them do their jobs a lot better. However, it also helped my marketing team to be able to do our jobs better as well, because we not only had things like keyword research to understand what people were searching for, but we also had this research from this tracking software that was able to tell us exactly what people's issues were. So why were they phoning up? Was it an issue with the website loading, for example, looking at the technical SEO side? But on the content side, it's things like, how do I change my name on my ticket? You know, I'm flying tomorrow. What do I need? I can't find it. There's no information on the airline's website. And that's where we would then step in and go, right, OK, we need to create pages on this that people were able to find, because, you know, the keyword research will tell you so much. But when you're looking at people's specific pain points and you're looking at growing group of people, again, which the keyword research tool probably won't be able to do all the time, that's where that kind of information was so important and so helpful. And it allowed us to grow and grow and grow.
And I suppose also that then allows you to sort of like think about content in slightly a broader way, right? Because I think, you know, I'm from an SEO background, right? That's kind of like where I've kind of come to a lot of these conversations, albeit I did work for magazines in the past, but it's always been this kind of, okay, well, we're producing the content to generate new business, new visitors, new people to our website. Whereas actually, yeah, you're talking there that like actually that the content could provide value beyond that, right? So for the people who are already customers, and it's kind of, you know, maybe the value is in reducing the calls to the call center, or, you know, kind of like answering people's questions at different points in time there as well. Yeah, and that's interesting. Zoe, have you ever kind of like found some interesting ways of generating that kind of, you know, pain points or insight stuff? Is, you know, like, are you kind of listening to, you know, social media sites where people are asking these questions and then using that to generate your content ideas?
Yeah, I was about to say I spend quite an unhealthy amount of time on TikTok, but it's research and
it's more work. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
yeah, it is. You do see that couples now, like, especially as, you know, the new generation is moving into, you know, they're 25 years old now, they're moving into that kind of wedding sphere. You know, they're quite early to it, but there are still people doing it. TikTok's their go-to, and they will post videos about their frustrations. They'll post videos about new trends they're seeing, and I make sure that I'm on it and I can, you know, capture that information and turn it into content.
And I suppose that's it, isn't it? It's kind of that, there's a real skill to that, isn't there, which is taking that stuff that might, you know, obviously TikTok is increasingly being set up as a place where you would search, but in reality video content is always, and like cultural phenomena are always going to be, perhaps, like, they can exist before they're accurately described on a website when people are searching for them, right? And that there's definite like value you can add, right, helping people find that stuff that they're searching for there as well.
Yeah,
some interest there in, sorry, go for it, Zoe.
Oh, I was about to give you an example. We've seen people talking about rap rides. So I saw this on TikTok. There were like 179 instances of it, and then I thought, well, I better make a video for us, you know, talking about what's a rap ride, because I knew that was going to come up as more and more people saw this content. And we were able to get like 5,000 views in a day on that video, and then turn it into an article on the site. We outranked The Sun. Like, it was just a really quick turnaround that just came from me researching on TikTok.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting though as well, because you're talking about that kind of recycling or repurposing of content to different media. Is that one that kind of you think like, and any tips for people who might want to kind of go down that route of like taking a video, turning it into an article, or, you know, that process of getting more than one piece of content from one, like, I don't know, idea, I suppose.
Yeah. So I'm like inherently lazy, and everything I do, I want it to work as hard as possible. So every idea I have, I'm like, well, how can we, you know, milk this for social? How can we get the best SEO? How are we going to translate this to an email newsletter? Like, I want everything to work as hard as possible, because I think we should all work smarter and less as a result. And I do think that we have to meet people in many different ways as well. We're in a really strange sort of situation here at the moment, because we have couples in their 40s, 50s and beyond, but we also have couples in their 20s, and we do have to find ways to meet them where they are. And I don't want to be complacent. I've worked in the past with people who've said social media is a fad, we're not going to be doing that. That kind of attitude, that's how you know, digital is not going to be around, print is the, you know. So I'm always like, well, no, actually, we can't afford to have that kind of attitude. We can't be snobs about anything. Like, if people are on TikTok, I need to meet them there. If people are searching, I need to meet them there. You know, we've got to find all these different ways to engage with our audience. So every piece of content has to work.
And I'm interested as well, because obviously the TikTok stuff and the way, you know, there's kind of a world of influencers there as well. And I think there's, you know, like in Natalie's experience of travel as well, there's kind of the travel bloggers as well. Have you had much kind of involvement in like collaborations or co-creations? Is that something that's like can work well? Is that something that's like, yeah, been something that's had like value for you there?
Yeah, we do that a lot. And it's again, it's an interesting time, because it's typically like a very marketing led initiative to, you know, hire influencers to advertise us. But me, again, looking for ways to make things work as hard as possible for us, so we can, you know, not be burnt out. I've been exploring ways with our marketing manager that we can collaborate better on this. And actually, there was a fantastic talk at Brighton SEO in September by Ashley Liddell about the power of using influencers and search and combining them together. And we do have the, you know, generic ones. We work with a lot of high profile people who are getting married who just talk about how great our app is, and that works for us. But then we're like, how can we make it work harder for us? And one thing that was very personal for me is that we've seen a lot of people talking about body image and weddings and how they feel on their wedding day and the pressure that comes with that. And that's something I've seen for years and years and years, and it doesn't go away. And unfortunately, you know, I still get emails today saying 10 tips for shedding for the wedding, or like your wedding dress workout, bridal Botox, do you want to try it? And I think, what are you trying to say to people? So we collaborated with a whole like series of influencers, and it's an ongoing thing. And I say influencers, it's a broad term, because some of them had hundreds of thousands of followers, some of them had a couple thousand, but what was important is that they had a story to tell. And we launched a campaign from that called Already Wedding Ready, which is actually very hard to say out loud. And these people all had a different story about what made them unique and why they would not be changing who they were for their wedding day. And we did this. It wasn't really to get traffic. It wasn't to get signups. It wasn't to do anything like that. But it was for us, for brand perception and for trying to make our couples feel better about themselves. And we had, you know, Lucy Edwards, the blind TV presenter, got in touch with us and said, I want to be part of this. And we worked with her on that. We worked with a non-binary wheelchair user called Eliza. I think she's called... they're called Disabled Eliza on Instagram. And they worked with us to tell the story of how they would have their mobility aids in their wedding and how proud they were to be able to do that. Mm. There was also a transgender couple that we worked with, again, talking about how they'd kind of found who they were and were embracing that in the run-up to their wedding. And that kind of stuff, outside of just typical advertising, I think was really powerful for us. And it was something I was really proud to be able to do.
Yeah. And I can see there's all kinds of, it's that's appealing to everyone, right? And that's kind of the nature of what, there's the temptation sometimes to go into ever narrower groups of people who are precisely the perfect customer group for that, you know, the interpretation that you have for that, for your content. But actually there's, plenty of opportunity to produce content for all kinds of different people, isn't it?
Yeah, that makes sense. The wedding industry has a long way to go, I think. It's making changes, definitely, but there is a lot to be done to make it more inclusive and representative. And we are trying to drive that conversation with our content.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a really interesting place to sort of, draw things a little bit to a close here in terms of like that conversation. It's one that I find really interesting. I definitely could keep on chatting away for hours about this with people who kind of really know the topic inside and out. But one thing I always like to do as we kind of start to wrap up today's episode is when we're joined by incredible guests like this, I'm always interested to understand what the resources, the websites, the social media accounts, the books, the newsletters, all of these kind of like potential places that we could go to where they're benefiting and learning and picking things up that potentially the audience and myself personally could go and check out and see what they're learning from there. Is there anything, Natalie, that immediately kind of jump out to you as a place that you'd recommend that people go and check out if they've found some of the things you've been talking about today interesting, or even just like more broadly, I suppose?
Yeah, so I've got... Three separate little newsletters to recommend. So the first one is 10 Things by Lauren Pope. Lauren's a content designer, and there's some fantastic insights in there. It's not just about content. Fantastic newsletter to sign up for. There's obviously the Core Updates SEO newsletter from Mark Williams Cook, and also Conversations by the Sea by Ellen Boyle, which is a fantastic newsletter. It's not, again, not always about content, but it's really inspirational and talks about things not just in the zeitgeist, but just things on a nice personal level. Three fantastic newsletters that I love to get in my inbox every week.
I love a newsletter as well. I think they're kind of, they're one of these things that have been around, have had a bit of a resurgence, and I definitely think there's some great content being produced that perhaps in the past might have been on in different formats, that now newsletters are the way that that's being distributed. So I'll definitely drop those in the show notes as well. So if you're watching, they'll be there under YouTube, and if you're listening, we'll have them in the various places as well. How about you, Zoe?
I've just written those down. Thanks, Natalie. For me, it's going to be TikTok again, I'm afraid, but I am really obsessed with a content creator on there called @AliceIsGratified. And she is somebody who's worked in social and influencer marketing for a really long time and is sharing her insights, experience and knowledge, and setting herself challenges as well, and then attempting like to put her advice to the test. She's just done a how to become an influencer in a certain amount of days challenge and talked us through how she was doing it. And I think I have learned a lot from this, and it's incredible that all the advice she's giving is out there for free. I really recommend her content. She's very good.
Fantastic. And also, Zoe, if people want to kind of keep in touch with you and the various ways they might do that, it's like it might be a social network or a website that you'd recommend people to do if they want to check out or keep in, up to date with what you're up to.
Yeah, well, people can find me on hitched.co.uk, but I'm also on Instagram at @ZoeBurke_editor, and I'm quite active on there for chats and things if anyone wants to get in touch.
Fantastic. And Natalie?
So I'm on LinkedIn, Natalie Arney. I've got my own website, nataliearney.com. And then you can find me on Twitter or X. It's __NCA. And then Instagram and Threads and everything else as TK can make. It's my
yeah,
old
it, it, it's, yeah, it's hard. Here are my 15 links and those ones.
But on my Twitter account, I've got all of my links anyway on my pinned post. So yeah.
Fantastic.
Check that out.
But yeah, thanks everyone for joining us today. I've learned a lot. I hope you have as well. And yeah, hopefully we'll be speaking to you again soon. Thanks everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist digital marketing conference covering SEO, PPC, paid social, web analytics, and content marketing. If you want to find out more about us and the show, you can check out the website, internetmarketingpodcast.org. And if you've not already subscribed to the show, you should hit that subscribe button. And can I ask a favour, if you are subscribed and you're enjoying the show, can you leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to the show? And if you want to get in touch, become a guest on the show, or just generally feedback about what we're doing, you can always email me. That's kelvin@brightonseo.com. So kelvin@brightonseo.com, or of course you can contact me on social media, so at LinkedIn or Twitter. My usernames are Kelvin Newman. See you soon.